Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, May the 7th. And today we're going to catch up with our friend Frank Burke. We're going to talk about some current events. I don't have to tell you too much about them. We'll talk about Trump and the media. We'll talk about this controversy over anonymous sources. That appears to be the biggest family in Washington these days, the anonymous family. It seems like they've got more siblings than anybody I've ever known, but everybody being quoted these days is an anonymous source. And then we'll talk about President Trump and these accusations of wiretapping, meaning that whether he was wiretapped by the Obama administration. And that, of course, has created a lot of the usual screaming. And we'll see what Frank has to say about that. Just a quick note, I have a post on Wednesday morning where I talk about the latest person to get a bad case of Trump derangement syndrome. And that's none other than Raul Castro, Fidel's little brother, as they like to refer to him. Well, it appears that Raul Castro went down to a special meeting where they were celebrating the fourth anniversary of Hugo Chavez's death. And he gave a big anti-Trump speech where he talked about this and this and that about Donald Trump. And he made reference to the fact that he believes that Donald Trump is going to violate all these environmental agreements. I'm not exactly sure what he means by that, but then we're usually not too sure what he means about anything. But it does look like Raul Castro is the latest victim of something known as Trump derangement syndrome. And he seems to have a pretty bad case of it, to say the least. Let me say hello to our good friend Frank Burke. Frank, how's the weather up in Wisconsin?
Weather in Wisconsin is beautiful, Silvio. It was in the, I think the 40s today, but it was a real beautiful, you know, skies clear, a few clouds, but blue skies, a lot of very heavy wind, real early March with the promise of spring and a lot of the snow gone. So you don't get better than that. This kind of day in March and similar days in October are my two favorite times of the year. So I could not give them up.
Well, we have a beautiful day. We had a beautiful day here in North Texas as well. More maybe about in the 50s, 60s, but the same type of sky, blue sky, absolutely beautiful. The kind of day where you want to go out and have lunch, you know what I mean? Get out of the office and go out to the park.
Great. Yes.
Yeah, and have lunch out there in the park and maybe be the inspiration for that song, MacArthur Park. You know, about
right. Sylvia, why does it always come back to rock and roll with the two of us?
I don't know. It's got to be in our genes, you know, but
it does. But if it's not the eve of destruction, it's MacArthur Park.
That's it, you know. MacArthur Park by the great Richard Harris, one of the a 45 that was 7 minutes 20 seconds long.
Right.
I don't know how they were able to put that many minutes on a 45, but we'll leave that for another show. I did want to just briefly talk about John Adams and Abigail Adams. Of course, John Adams, one of the founding fathers, the second president, the first vice president, one of the truly great founding fathers, his lovely wife, Abigail Adams, a really neat lady in her time, probably ahead of her time in many ways. But they wrote these letters to each other, a total of 1,160 letters that they wrote all throughout their lives, especially when John was traveling and so on. They would write these marvelous letters to each other. These letters have become great sources of information for historians as well, because they wrote a great deal about what was happening in the country. I think it's fascinating. I mean, that a couple would write each other 1,160 letters. I don't even think I've texted that many times to one person, Frank. So it's just remarkable, that many letters, Frank.
It truly is, Silvio. And I'm not one to throw rain on the parade, but I have to say that being a bit of a kind of eccentric in temperament myself, I do have a problem with Abigail Adams. Now, one of my rather weird heroes of the Founding Fathers was a minor character named General Charles Lee. And you may remember General Charles Lee. He disobeyed Washington's orders to advance at the Battle of Monmouth and was subsequently court-martialed. He hated Washington and made no, you know, bones about it. But the one thing about General Lee that I do admire was his love of dogs. He was constantly surrounded by a pack of dogs. In fact, when he went into Congress and sat in his chair, the dogs came in and sat around him. And in one of Abigail Adams' letters, she complained, she literally complained, that General Lee had made her, forced her, to shake hands with one of his dogs. Now, Silvio, I come from a dog family. Okay. We have dogs. That is known as the paw trick. Give me your paw. In fact, if you were to come to our house tonight, our dog Finn, who's a border collie, will you put out your hand, he would gladly give you his paw. And generally, was merely trying to demonstrate to Mrs. Adams, to her delight, that his dog knew the paw trick. And being the dour, sour New Englander she was, she had the gall to complain about it.
Well, that's one that must have been one of the letters I didn't read. But but you were talking, you know, we say we always go back to rock and roll. I have to go back one more time before we get to the serious stuff. I have to go back one more time because Johnny Cash did record a song called General Lee. And I don't know if we're talking about the same character. I'm going to have to research that. But there was a song by Johnny Cash called General Lee. So maybe your favorite general.
I think he may have been thinking about Robert E. Lee.
No, it wasn't about him. It wasn't about him.
Okay.
That much I do know, that it was not Robert E. Lee. So we're going to have to figure this out. Maybe we have to promise the audience that we'll research it for the next show.
We will.
But when you mentioned General Lee, I was just listening to that song today. That's why I brought it up. But anyway, let's get into all the serious stuff that there's way too much serious stuff. We have to have a little diversion from time to time because it's a crazy world. But I sent you I think I did send you a copy of a brand new poll being put out by IBD, which is Investors Business Daily, and their polling organization TIPP. And by the way, this happened to have been the most of all the polls in 2016. This is the one that consistently predicted that Donald Trump was going to win. So, you know, they obviously have something going there at IBD. And this poll has a very interesting conclusion. It kind of ties into two of our points tonight. The conclusion is that 55% of the people in this poll believe that the media is just being too negative against Donald Trump. They're just trying to basically go after, I mean, they're just nitpicking and just going after Trump. And again, it's only one poll, and we don't want to base everything on one poll. But I have seen others that suggest, for example, that people want the two parties to work together, not this kind of bickering. And I think, Frank, I think that is true in general, that people are sick and tired of the bickering. They're sick and tired of what's going on where, you know, a man is put through the ringer like Attorney General Sessions. Even what happened to Mr. Flynn, I thought, was a bit too much. And
yeah,
and I think
much
maybe
so.
The media is over. maybe the media is overdoing this a little bit, Frank. So I just wanted to get your thoughts first on that, and then I'll ask you another question. So go ahead, Frank.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and I think that it's not a little bit, it's too much. It's way a lot. They're trying to, frankly, assume power. They're trying to denigrate the Trump administration and indicate that, you know, they are the ones that that really know the truth. And the people are fed up with it. They don't want it anymore. The bottom line is, you know, Donald Trump, when they put out, for instance, today, the new health care plan, and he said, let's talk about it. Well, you know, it has never been mentioned that the Dems passed this among themselves in the dark of night on a Christmas Eve and said, here it is, and Nancy's Pelosi's stupid famous comment, oh, you have to pass it to see what's in it. Well, that's not what's happening here. This is coming out, and Trump is saying, let's deal. Let's talk about it. And, you know, Chuck Schumer, who is worthless, he's the worst example of the old political hack. He and Pelosi saying, well, this is all bad, this is terrible. No, you say, all right, let's talk with Mr. Trump and see if we can come to an agreement about something that pleases us both. That's what Trump does. He's a deal maker. And these other people are just ideologues and fanatics. And I think
right.
That's what is really the thing that's getting the American people very angry.
Well, and you're exactly right. I mean, I agree with you. This Obamacare is a good example of the Obamacare repeal, replace legislation or idea is a good example. Trump, I mean, the Republicans have put something on the table. Now, some people may not think it's enough or whatever. I think it's a good starting point. I mean, as you said, it's a good place to start.
You're absolutely right.
It's a good place to start. You know, we're going to negotiate here. Let me put this on the table, and let's go from here. Now, the other problem with the critics like Nancy Pelosi and many Democrats is that when they criticize, when they say, for example, the GOP proposal is going to do this and the GOP proposal is going to do that, well, they're misstating the situation, because the fact is that if you're under Obamacare at this point, if you have an Obamacare policy or you're covered under Obamacare, there's no guarantee that whatever you have, you're going to have at the end of the year. Because in most states, the exchanges have collapsed or about to collapse. There are now places where there's only one carrier, and many of them there won't be a carrier by the end of the year. So if you don't do anything by the end of the year, these people are really going to lose whatever they have. But if they get into the room and start negotiating with the Republicans, maybe we can come up with something that takes care of those needs of people who have pre-existing conditions or who may have the plan right now under some kind of a subsidy. But they can get in the room, and we can put together something that is more bipartisan than the original version, which was completely partisan. But at least you're right, Frank, at least we would have a negotiated settlement. You know, both sides would be able to say, I got something, you got something, let's shake hands and be happy. But
well,
right now, yeah, I mean,
go ahead. Yeah, you have said it all. That is precisely what needs to be done. And the fact that this Obamacare is collapsing is not at all being taken into account by the Democrats. You know, Barack Obama had the opportunity, the Democrats had the opportunity to start fine-tuning this, to saying, okay, this isn't working, we've got to do this. No, they wanted it to collapse in the hope that they could go to an English-style, one-payer, single-payer, total government health care system. There was no attempt made in all the time that Obamacare was on the skids in the Obama administration to try and save it. It was literally designed to fail. And now I think it's the same thing. It's not like you are not dealing with people of goodwill. You are not dealing with people who want to come out of this with a constructive solution. you're dealing with ideologues who are furious that their plan to turn this into a total government-controlled healthcare system has failed, and they're not going to have anything to do with saving a reasonable insurance plan.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. And if you look at the opportunities that President Obama had to fix Obamacare, you know, after 2010, he lost the House. He took a beating. Most of the people who lost in 2010 lost, certainly in the Senate. You could clearly identify that Obamacare was the reason they lost. In 2014, a bunch of so-called red state Democrats went down for the same reason, Obamacare, including this fellow next to us, next door to us, the Pryor, Senator Pryor, who was the son of a former senator of a long Democrat family in Arkansas. I mean, he went down. He went down to the younger Senator Cotton. And the reason, number one reason, was Obamacare. So, it, you know, they didn't get the message in 2010. They didn't get the message in 2012. Well, he was reelected in 2012, but he was reelected by a smaller number. And he didn't get the message in 2014. It seems to me that at some point, he should have called in Harry Reid and said, look, Harry, we're in a mess here. We have got to fix this thing. So I'm going to send it back to you, and you come up with some solution, let the senators work on it. I think that he would have gotten a better product, Frank, and that better product maybe would have saved a few Democrats. I'm not going to say all of them, but saved a few of them. But I'll say one thing. We'll take a break, and then I want to come back and do a segment on anonymous sources and then this wiretapping story, which is absolutely fascinating. But I was talking to chatting a little bit the last couple of days with a Facebook friend who was telling me that this new GOP proposal was going to increase prices, was going to take away some things. And I said to my friend, I said, what planet are you in? I mean, the fact is that Obamacare is currently increasing at alarming rates. You know, one of our sons wanted to get some individual insurance a few months ago. And he went into the website. He showed it to me. He went into the website, and they have basically three plans, the three different premium levels. But the problem is that the premium, you might be able to get a subsidy on the premium if you're under a certain income level, but the deductibles are $10,000, $12,000, and so on, which means that the out-of-pocket cost for these programs is so high that a lot of people have simply said, the heck with it, we're not going to buy it, we'll just take a chance, and then, of course, you know, they'll pay the fine and get into it later. So Obamacare is not working, and I think people ought to be a little bit more open-minded, I agree with you, about what the Republicans put on the table. It's not going to be the final product. I can tell you that right now. It's going to change. I mean, our Senator Cruz here in Texas is demanding a few more things, and I know others are demanding. In my own personal opinion, if I could just flip a switch and fix it myself, I would repeal it and send it back to the states and let every state deal with it. Simply say, it's repealed.
Yeah.
Wisconsin, you deal with it. Texas, you deal with your problem. And basically, you've got 50 states dealing with it. And then from that, from all of those states dealing with it, we would get a better product. And there would probably be some regional associations of smaller states who get together and form their own plans. That would be my choice, Frank, if I could just flip a switch and fix it. But, of course,
I think
that's not the case.
It would be infinitely better than what they've got. Yes, exactly.
That's right. But that's not going to happen for a lot of reasons. And I think that at least they're putting something on the table for discussion. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to work out. This is going to be a big test for President Trump as to whether or not he can bring people together. If I was President Trump, Frank, I would invite those six or seven or eight Democrats up for re-election in 2018 in red states where he won by more than 10 points. And I would say to them, guys, work with me on this, because if you don't, you're going to probably lose your jobs. If you work with me, you might be able to keep your jobs. Otherwise, you won't be able to. Frank, let me take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to get into the media a little bit more. and also talk about this unbelievable wiretapping story that we heard from President Trump over the weekend. We'll be right back.
This is Carlos Quevez, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
Well, it's a great show. I can just tell you that I've seen it. I've seen it. We went out to it a couple weeks ago. It's a great show, great music, great food. So if you're not doing anything on Saturday night or you want to have a good time on Saturday night, just get out there to NOLA, N-O-L-A, downtown Dallas, and enjoy it for yourself. I mean, it's just fantastic. Frank, you're a big fan of the guitar. Can you imagine doing rock and roll with a harp?
I can imagine doing it with just about anything, Silvio.
Just about it. Yes, yes.
And if
yes.
I were in Dallas, I'd be at that show, I can promise you.
Well, I tell you, it's a great show. But who was it, Buddy Holly or one of the great stars who said that to play rock and roll, all you need is three chords and you'll figure it out? With
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, let's get into a couple... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's a great show. It's on disc. It's called The Wrecking Crew, and it's about the studio musicians who backed up so many of the great singers and rock groups of the time. They literally worked with Brian Wilson on the Pet Sounds thing, and they were all classically trained. As I say, they were called The Wrecking Crew. And they were just wonderful musicians. And at one point, they brought in Jan and Dean, if you remember those two rock and rollers, and Going to Surf City and all that. Well, neither of them could play the guitar. But they had to fake it. And one of the Wrecking Crew guys, who was a virtuoso guitarist, did this incredible series of riffs. And whoever it was, Jan or Dean, looked at him and said, "I can't even fake that. I can't even make my hand look like I'm doing that." So.
Oh, the little old lady from Pasadena.
Absolutely.
Jan and Dean, the little old lady from Pasadena. Well, let's get into. That's a great song. Let's get into.
It is.
Get into. It's just a great song. You know, the little lady going down this. I mean, the images of that song just floor me every time I think of this little old lady going.
Everybody's
down,
saying that there's nobody down, meaner than the little old lady from Pasadena. She drives real fast and she drives real hard. She's the terror of Colorado Boulevard.
It even rhymes. It even rhymes. You know, it makes it even gives it poetic justice here, but. But there's a couple of other stories that I wanted to get your thoughts on. The first one we kind of covered already a little bit with the media. There has been a rash, Frank, of anonymous sources. I mean, stories based on anonymous sources. Now, let me be fair, because I have a good friend who's a journalist down in Florida, and we talked a little bit about the other day on social media, and he was telling me something, which he's exactly right. He says very often in local politics, you know, when you're a small town newspaper or even a big town newspaper, and you're trying to figure out some local corruption, and you're trying to maybe expose, if you will, some local corruption or something, you very often have to use anonymous sources as a way of getting to the bottom of the situation. So I understand that part. I understand that part, and I actually think it's an important part of journalism. What I think we're watching right now, and you touched on this in the last segment, I think what we're watching right now is the media being used, willingly being used, I should say, by people who didn't like the election results, and now they want to basically make life miserable for the guy who won. And they're doing it by leaking things, by putting things out there. This Russia story, for example, nothing has ever been proven, Frank, but yet they keep repeating this. And I think that that's where, you know, that's where the media, I think, loses when they allow themselves to be used by one party or the other to basically do political work, Frank.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Silvio. The so-called mainstream media has been doing a hatchet job on Donald Trump because they are totally vested in the Democrat Party. Now, you know, whenever I hear one of these people say, when they talk about the bugging of Trump Tower, and they say, well, the President of the United States just could never have ordered that. Well, let me tell you something. Henry II, let's go back in our English history. Henry II did not murder Thomas Becket, but he stood in front of his barons and said, will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest? And the barons got the idea. There is no single document in Hitler's handwriting authorizing the extermination of the Jews. But in Ian Kershaw's marvelous biography of Hitler, he talks about the fact that his surrogates were always, as they called it, working toward the Führer. Namely, you did what you thought the Führer wanted, unless the Führer told you otherwise. And believe me, the Führer wanted the Jews gone. So let's not play games with this. It is obvious that Obama wanted Trump destroyed. And he wanted his so-called legacy, which is falling apart and now being taken apart, to succeed through Hillary Clinton. But it isn't going to happen. And they cannot tolerate that. The media that belong to him cannot go with it. So this is what you've got.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Forgive me for coughing there in your ear.
No.
But I think what also, yeah, that's right. What I also, the other thing I think happened, Frank, is that, you know, I've said many times over during his presidency that Obama was a bit sloppy in how they did things. And part of it was the fact that he was surrounded by a bunch of people who basically told him what he wanted to hear. He was not really surrounded by people who kind of knew what they were doing, I think. And I think what probably happened is they left all these tracks. They left all these tracks of things they were doing on the assumption. They did a lot of things on the assumption that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And then if Hillary Clinton wins, then she's not going to let these things be investigated. You know, they'll delay and delay and delay.
Right.
Look at the IRS scandal. Look at the other scandals, or Fast and Furious and the IRS scandal, where they, you know, they just delay, executive privilege, delay, and pretty soon people get tired of it. So they thought, well, you know, we can do these things. She's going to win anyway, and then, you know, she'll protect us. Well, it didn't work out that way. And now they're finding themselves under, you know, let's say under the microscope a little bit, and they're beginning to realize, you know, some of these things may actually get exposed. Which kind of ties into this presidential announcement, the wiretapping announcement, which I have to confess, I really don't know what to believe because I haven't seen anything. But on the other hand, they do have a history of doing some crazy things, like the IRS, and look what they did on Benghazi, and they've investigated some other people. Look at some of the press people they investigated. So, you know, there's probably something there. But I don't know what to make of it, Frank. Well, what do you make of President Trump accusing President Obama of the wiretapping? Do you think there's something there?
Oh, I think there's a lot there. In fact, if you go back in the New York Times, and I want to say it was in September, someone leaked to the Times that as a result of wiretaps, they were investigating the Trump relationship with a Russian bank. Now, you know, So the Times had talk about a wiretap going way back. Obviously, somebody leaked this. Obviously, it existed. And yes, I think definitely. I think when this comes out, that it will come out that the administration, through a, call it their Department of Justice, if you can associate Eric Holder and that woman, that dreadful woman, with that they would not have hesitated to do this. And we're looking at the fact that I think the thing is falling apart like a ripe an overripe melon. You look at the FBI. Nobody knows what Comey is up to. The people within the FBI don't like him. You say, the FBI is, this is a great organization. Well, yeah, but look, go back to the Clinton administration. Who produced the dossiers on senior Republicans at the request of the Clintons? It was the FBI. There are problems there. There are problems endemic throughout this thing. I mean, in all of the offices of government, State Department, Justice Department, none of the employees, when they asked, okay, what percentage contributed to Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, all of it was over 96% contributed to Hillary Clinton. So you have a very dreadful situation here, where there's an incredible bias among government employees toward the Democrat Party. And, anybody who thinks they're not going to use everything at their disposal to defeat their enemies, I think is very naive.
Right. And it was Newt Gingrich, I think, who talked about this last night, or at least I saw him talk about this last night. He was talking about justice, the Department of Justice, where 95% of the contributions went to Hillary Clinton. Now, I am going to, just for the benefit of I'm just going to say that probably 99% of that 95%, which is a lot of people because these are big departments, but I'm willing to go and say that 99% of them are probably good people who just go to work. And they'll wake up the morning after the election and say, my person didn't win, but I still have a job to do as a public servant. But you still leave open 1%. In an organization as large as the Department of Justice, they must have a population who works there of thousands of employees. So there's got to be probably 10, 15, 20 who would participate in this kind of leaking. And I'm saying justice, it could be the CIA, it could be whatever department. And I can see people in those places working to leak information that could be detrimental to the president. And you're also seeing, I think, Frank, this is a bit off topic, but it's related a little bit. I think you're also seeing that Franklin Delano Roosevelt may have been right on when he opposed public sector unions. Because I think
I was just about to make that point. Yes, you were so right. You were so right.
Because what you basically have is a public sector that has now basically, the public sector and the Democrat Party are basically the same thing. It wasn't always that way. It used to be the Democrat Party and private sector unions. And I have no problem with private sector unions. I think private sector unions are wonderful. They're necessary. I don't belong to one, but I have no problem with them. Because I think workers need to be represented. But in the public sector, you run into the kinds of problem that we're seeing right now, where I think that you, in essence, you create what some people are calling the deep state. I think that's what they're calling it, where you basically have a bureaucracy that can make life miserable for the guy at the top. And I tell you, I get more and more convinced every day, Frank, that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt was 100% correct, and I wish we would disband public sector unions. They have no business. If you need a union to work in the federal government, we'll get another job because they've got pretty good benefits without the union, Frank.
Right. No, I agree with you completely. And it was John Kennedy that lifted that ban and permitted the unionization of public employees, and it was a terrible, terrible mistake that he made. Well, because it was a favor he paid back to the unions that had pushed him. But by the same token, these unions are the last vestiges of the Democrat union base, because private sector unions, with their regulations and everything they've done, the taxation, to discourage American business, they have materially destroyed the private sector unions. So their last hope is the public sector unions. You know, the high watermark of the private sector unions was in the mid-50s, when something like 1 in 3 people was a union member. 1 in 3 working people was a union member. And when they kept up, as they do now, with the Obama war on coal, come on, what's that going to do to the union? The fight against the pipelines? What's that going to do to working people? Prohibition against oil drilling off the coast, and the nationalization of lands and forbidding exploration, what's that doing to American jobs? And don't these people get it?
And then you add the EPA to that, which is the EPA is nothing but a capitalism killing machine, and you have all of these problems. But let me ask you one last question before we wrap up. I'm sure we'll do more shows in the course of the year. But do you think that at some point here in the next 2 or 3 months, when we look back at this announcement by President Trump, do you think that, I mean, the wiretapping announcement, do you think that this is going to be in a few months something very, very serious that in fact, I'm not saying, I mean, to me, the highest level person in the Obama administration that could conceivably have legal problems would be the attorney general, because the president is technically out of the loop. He may have said, can somebody do this for me? But technically, you know, he's out of the loop because his signature is not going to be on anything. But I do think the attorney general could be in problem or could have problems. So do you foresee that this is going to get worse, Frank?
I really do. I really do, because I don't see, you know, let me put it this way. I think that Trump, and I really, this is one of the things I really disagree with him on. When he said the Clintons are good people, we're not going to, you know, push this. Hey, wait a minute. No. He was elected on the basis that we're all equal under the law. He was going to follow up on all of the crookedness of the Clinton Foundation. Hasn't happened. I haven't seen them reopen investigations into Fast and Furious, into Benghazi, into all these other things that now they should be investigating. And especially, you know, the whole meeting with Clinton on the airplane. All of that should be investigated. And that they keep talking about Russia. No, let's not make it Russia. Let's have an investigation about the election of 2016. And let's go back and see what Hillary Clinton was doing and what Barack Obama was doing. And widen the scope of it and see where the bodies fall.
I agree. And so, I think they should include the Clinton Foundation in this investigation. But the Clinton Foundation under the microscope. I mean, I believe that if you're going to investigate everything. My sense is that Democrats are smart enough to know that that's a real trap for them, because that will bring in, as I mentioned, that'll bring in a lot of problems with the Clinton Foundation. But, you know, to wrap it up with another rock and roll bit of wisdom here, we ain't seen nothing yet. We ain't seen nothing yet by the Blue Magoos.
I can't get better than that, Silvio.
So we ain't seen nothing yet. That's going to be our departure for tonight. We ain't seen nothing yet in the wisdom of the Blues Magoos. They just had one hit, as I recall, and that was it. We ain't seen nothing. They were a one-hit wonder, but Tonight, we found their wisdom to be very useful for our show. Frank, as always, thank you for your time, and we'll get together again. I think we'll have a lot to talk about the next time.
I think we will. Great discussion, Silvio. Thank you, and bless you and the audience.
Thank you so much. Frank Burke up in Wisconsin, our good friend up there, a businessman and author. We have a link to the book on the show information. Check it out. It's a great book. I read it last year. Absolutely wonderful book. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.